welcome. It's 4 p.m. Central Time right here on GCN. That means it's now time for INN World Report Radio. Good afternoon. My name is Tom Kiley. I will be your host for the next hour, finishing out this week of some great programming that we had. And we're going to finish it out in style here. We're going to be joined in the next segment by Dan Gooden, who is a technology writer. We're going to continue our discussion that we started having here in the last week or two about technology and not only the role that it's playing, but also the part of technology that doesn't get discussed too much among friends. I know that it's very common for us to let each other know about the latest iPhone that we got or the latest gadget or software or texting device or instant messaging service or something like that. But the assumption, the underlying assumption is that it's all friendly and it's all on the up and up. But at the same time, friends, we're putting more and more of our life information into these systems, and we're acting as if that information is as secure as it used to be in the old days. I mean, if you had a little black book in your pocket, that's about it, right? Friends and colleagues and associates and maybe more than that were just that. They were in your pocket. But now we have the tendency to put everything online, put it on our PCs, and it is no longer secure in our pocket like it used to be. So we're going to be talking about that with our guest Dan Gooden. He writes for The Register and some other technical blogs and websites and so forth. In the meanwhile, let's see here. On a Friday, we're rounding out the week. Why don't you give me a call? The phones are open right now, 866-582-9933, 866-582-9933. Topic is open. We can speak about whatever you would like. And I will send you out a copy of the Wayne Mattson book, Jaded Tasks, just for calling in to show our appreciation. It is Listener Appreciation Day every day here on INN World Report. In any case, I'd love for somebody to call me and give me your opinion about this shooting in Washington, D.C. Now it looks like they're trying to paint the shooter as some sort of 9/11 person, which is interesting. I don't know. I kind of expect that the great reality spin makers are probably trying to figure a way to discredit or cast people's eyes away from the fact that just a couple of weeks ago, architects and engineers hit a major milestone and got their 1,000th architect and or engineer to join on their organization officially. So that's that's something that made big news and justifiably so, I would say. that's a large group of professionals. It's not just a few people howling in the woods. And I noticed that the news went kind of very far. Even the Washington Times, the conservative Washington Times, had an article about it, and it was not a hit piece. Interestingly enough, typically when a major mainstream publication or television program comes to do a story about 9/11 truth, they act all nice and friendly and they smile and they'll take your information and then they end up editing it and turning it into a hit piece. And we've seen that happen, for instance, with the History Channel. Even we at INN World Report, we did a rebuttal. In fact, you can find it, I'm sure, still on YouTube. If you look up INN World Report and or INN even for that matter, probably, and 9/11 on YouTube or the History Channel 9/11, you'll find there's a whole series, about four or five segments on there, because we had to cut them into smaller pieces. And we even talked with Alex Jones about it. Alex was featured in the History Channel piece a few years back, and the way Alex puts it, if you look at the program, here he is being his usual impassioned self up on the stage at a it looks like a college auditorium or a college lecture hall or something, and then you see the kids in the audience, and the audience is about only one third full. And then secondly, people aren't even looking at the stage. You know, they're yawning or having a sandwich or whatever, poking around on their cell phones. And you know, we asked Alex about that, and he said, you know, this is, he said, I knew this was going to happen. What they did was, when I was talking, the audience was packed. Everybody was very interested. And they stuck around before, between speakers and so forth, and they filmed the audience when there was a break and there was nobody on stage. And then what they did, back in the editing room, they put those two pieces together. They juxtaposed them and more, and there's, you know, Richard Gage has similar kinds of stories and so forth, where the mainstream media does a hatchet job when they're trying to act like they're all friendly with 9/11. In any case, let's see. Who we got here? Franklin? Why don't we go right now to Franklin in, what is that, New Mexico, Franklin?
Yes, sir.
How you doing today, Franklin?
Very well.
Well, thank you very much for calling in.
Great topic today.
You too. What do you want to talk about? Go ahead. You got the floor.
Shooting at the Pentagon. They're trying to blame this as if it was. They're trying to hide the truth, just like they did with the gentleman that flew his plane into the IRS building. Glenn Beck came out and said that he was a 9/11 truther with no. Nothing to substantiate that.
Well, even if he was a 9/11 truther, I mean, you know, I'm sure he's a lot of other things, too. Maybe he's a Catholic. Maybe he's a Protestant. You know, maybe there's a lot of things. Is there any reason to believe that if he actually was a 9/11 truther, that that had anything to do with his act?
Well, it shouldn't.
I mean, I'm hearing this stuff, but what connection are they trying to draw that even if it's true? Now, I'm reading in the papers where the government was able to track him. Apparently, this guy drove across the country from California, I think it was, and the government tracked his entire trip. I'm assuming they tracked it after the fact instead of tracking it beforehand. But I thought that was very interesting. They tracked his entire trip. I don't know if it was through his GPS system in his car or the GPS system in his phone or his credit card purchases for gas or something. But did you hear that? That the government's saying now that they tracked his entire trip across the country. What do you think of that?
That's it gets more fantastic as every minute goes by.
Did you ever think you'd live to see the day when we would get all this interesting technology and, you know, everyone's treating it like candy, but at the same time, this is a tyrant's dream, isn't it? I mean, can you imagine if Adolf Hitler could track everybody on their cell phones through the GPS or if he had database servers and so forth? Can you imagine what a field day he would have had with that?
Well, what's scary about this whole mess is that these folks, it looks like they're just getting started. I mean, we haven't seen anything yet.
Well, I think they've been at it for some time, but I think that they're and in fact, I think that we just don't know what they have been up to, and I don't know if they're just getting started, but I think we're just getting started to become aware of what it is that they're up to. But we're going to be talking about technology because it's a very interesting dichotomy. It does great things, but it could be bad in the wrong hands. Franklin, why don't you stay on and speak with my producer? Give him your address, and I'll send you out this great book, all right?
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. All right, we'll be back in just a few minutes with Dan Gooden. America, you are being tested, but here's where we study for it. From 1/2 mile north of Ground Zero in New York City, you are listening to INN World Report Radio with Tom Kiley. Now, daily on GCN, 4 until 5 p.m. Central. For 9 years, the alternative media activists at INN have produced national daily television news and information programming, top-of-the-hour radio news briefs, and INN World Report Radio. News talk radio that brings you real news the networks won't tell you, and all of it 100% certified, neocon-free. To find out more and for details on the stories we are following, go to innworldreport.net.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Good friends, welcome back. This is Tom Kiley, INN World Report Radio, right here on the great GCN Radio Network, 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, 4 until 5 p.m. Central Time, where we endeavor to bring you real news the networks won't tell you. We also produce the top-of-the-hour news briefs that you hear right before this program, hopefully before many other programs here on GCN, but I'm going to have to go talk with Ted about that. You know, we provide these for GCN in hopes that you'll get to them, and or they'll get to you, I should say, because we do work hard to give you stories, I think, that you might even agree if you've heard them on a regular basis. So we work hard to give you information that's out there, but the gatekeepers in the corporate media have chosen not to, for one reason or another, put out there. Of course, some stuff is overlapping for sure, but we always seek then an alternative perspective on a story that's out there. Meanwhile, I apologize. We're having a little bit of difficulty connecting with our guest, or are we? Hold on. There is, we're having a little bit of trouble connecting with our guest. There might have been a mix-up because he was scheduled to join us last week, and we had to reschedule with him. Anyway, I apologize for that. Hopefully, he'll be joining us soon. But in the meanwhile, I'm going to continue, friends, with open phones. You can give me a ring. 866-582-9933. That is totally toll-free for you. So if you're on a landline, you don't have to worry about any kind of toll charges. 866-582-9933. Call me up. We'll talk about whatever you would like to talk about, and I will give you a book. I've got Jaded Tasks, Wayne Madsen's book. Very, very good. Also, The Oil Card by James Norman, I think, is a fascinating book as well. I'm going to have him back on the program soon, talking about the manipulation of oil prices in the 80s, keeping it artificially low to starve the Soviet Union, who gained a lot of their hard currency foreign reserves from the sale of their oil. And now with speculation, lots of money being pumped into the speculation on the price of oil for futures and so forth. And his theory is that's because it drives the price way up, and China needs to import at this stage of the game about half of their oil, and they aren't even nearly in full swing yet. So trying to use it as an economic weapon. Interesting. That's what's in his book, The Oil Card, Global Economic Warfare in the 21st Century, James R. Norman. It's actually quite interesting. He's also talking, he's also one of these people who talks about, you know, there really isn't peak oil, and that it's you know, there's tons of oil in the ground, actually, but it's deeper than we thought and so forth. So that, you know, who knows? You know, there's a lot of people talk about the former or the peak oil scare as if maybe well-intentioned scientists really felt that way. Other people claim it's a bit of a manipulation as well to drive up the price. Anyhow, as I understand it, Dan Gooden is now on the line with us. Dan, are you there?
I am.
Hey, welcome. Thank you very much for joining us. Dan Gooden, friends, a technology writer. He writes in The Register. Any other online journals or print media, Dan, that you write with?
Just The Register.
Very good. Well, I think that's a pretty good one right off the bat. Welcome to the program. And I apologize, Dan. We had you lined up last Friday, but we had this really bad snowstorm here in New York, and we had a major event at the big studio downstairs that evening, and it was all messed up. So I'm glad that we connected with you today.
My pleasure.
Dan, I'm trying to afford our audience here an alternative view of technology. Everybody's familiar with the great modern inventions that we have. They seem to have come in a big rush, you know, whether it's cell phones or Blackberries or texting or instant messaging or iPhones or picture phones and, you know, webcasting and all the rest of it. And everybody just, before you came on, I was saying how in the old days you had your little black book and you kept it in your breast pocket or in your back pocket or whatever, and that was your contacts. That was your friends and your family and maybe more than that, business associates, what have you. But you knew where it was, and it stayed in your pocket. Unless you gave that information to somebody, you had a reasonable assurance that, it only went out when you wanted it to go out. That's not the same. Things don't work that way anymore, do they?
Well, you know, I mean, computers are common. I mean, things got lost in those days. There were certainly problems with black books. People would copy them or do other things. But you at least had some idea when it was lost that it was lost. The thing that a lot of people are surprised by these days is that they – you know, put a whole bunch of information, you know, say on Facebook or MySpace, or, you know, they go and they tweet it, on Twitter or something like that. And then they're shocked and amazed that they didn't get a job, because their prospective employer, found out that, they were, used to work as a dominatrix or something like that, you know. And I think oftentimes it isn't so much that, there weren't threats or risks in the old world. There weren't threats, for instance, with your black address book. But rather that people understood those threats, and people have yet to really digest and come to appreciate the threats that exist in a world of Facebook and Twitter and instant messaging and Blackberries and all those other things you talked about.
You know, I would like to hope that it's an opportunity for the world to sort of step up to the plate. You know, that was an interesting example that you made. Actually, in the old days, somebody maybe was a dominatrix or something, but they still got the job, and maybe they did quite well in the job. You know, it's just that it wasn't a matter of public record. My hope is that, with more transparency, and I'd like to see it be all the way around, that we could sort of get over that and realize that everybody – people's performance. But another example that came to mind when you were saying that, I know, for instance, a lot of people like to put their resume online, for instance. And I've been told by various headhunters that I've worked with in the past, that's a really bad idea, because employers, if they see that your name's out there too much, they might not be interested in you as well. Have you ever heard of anything like that?
I've not heard anything about, an employer not being – I mean, there are reasons why you don't want to put your resume online, but not for the reasons that I just heard you say. The real reason that you might not want to put your resume online is that you're now opening yourself up to be targeted in a type of attack that's is commonly referred to as spear phishing, where, we all get spam and we all get, emails or, attempts to fish us for, a bank account. But more often than not, it says, dear Bank of America customer, we are assessing the strength of your password and we need you to visit this website and enter your username and password here. And of course, the website that you're led to isn't owned by or operated by Bank of America at all, but it's by some, criminal enterprise.
Dan, we're going to have to ask you to hold on because we're going on break. We're speaking with Dan Gooden, technology writer. We'll be with him right back after this.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
right, good friends, welcome back. This is Tom Kiley, INN World Report Radio, Monday through Friday, right here on the great GCN Radio Network, 4 until 5 p.m. Central Time. And we're continuing, friends, our discussion with technology. There's a personal side, of course. It's affecting not just our personal lives, commerce, everything else. And it's interesting. We're speaking with Dan Gooden. He's a technology writer. He writes for a website called The Register, where they're up on a lot of technological stories there. Sometimes it's a little bit inside baseball, but Dan wrote a very interesting story about the hackers purportedly from China and the difficulties. Was that with Google, Dan?
It was with Google and at least 33 other companies that many of them were in the same league, Fortune 500 companies, large corporations with very, very sensitive proprietary data.
And why don't you share with our listeners, the gist of the article there, because I think this is the kind of thing that is another dimension to it that's on a more on a social level. But and I think it's particularly interesting when you look at the different societies and how technology sort of, goes across them. And it's not one size fits all, is it? There's different rules in different countries and so forth.
Well, so Google kind of dropped a bombshell on the world in mid-January when they announced that they had been hit and their defenses were breached by what they called a very sophisticated cyber attack. And they weren't exactly specific about what they meant by a sophisticated attack, but it generally amounted to attackers who had an incredible amount of patience and were able to spend weeks or months researching specific individuals inside of Google, getting to know their name, getting to know all of their friends, and then finding these friends on Facebook, infiltrating their Facebook accounts, sending emails and that type of thing, so that they were able to actually send messages with viruses and other types of computer attacks to the people inside of Google and make it look like it came from friends of these individuals.
So that trusted sources
let down. Say that again?
Make it look like it came from trusted sources, I guess.
Yeah, precisely. As a result, there were now viruses inside of Google's perimeter that were able to pull down what Google was calling intellectual property. Most people are taking that to mean source code for some of their web applications. And Google said that it would appear that the source of these attacks was China, although they have so far provided really no evidence that in fact that's the case, but it very well may have been. But the implication is that this was perhaps a state-sponsored attack inside of China that had either the implicit or explicit backing of the government in an attempt to do corporate espionage on Google. And and Google said that, at least 20 other companies were, large companies were hit by similar attacks, and security researchers have since upped that number to a total of 34 companies.
Interesting. The first thing that comes to mind is it sounds like, based on what you said, that the Google was relying, among other things, for its protection on trusted sources by their employees. So, in other words, should it make much difference whether a virus comes in because you think it's a friend of yours when it isn't, or if it comes in from some other way? Shouldn't you be protected against that sort of thing in any case?
Well, ideally, you should be. I mean, you should never get mugged by somebody on the street, and you should never have your house burgled either. But these things happen, and so in a similar fashion, somebody was able to get into to Google. Now the question is if you're trying to burgle somebody or mug somebody, the question is how do you do it? And so you always want to figure out a way to catch, you know, the person when they have their guard down. And so the way that, if I want to get my virus inside of Google, then the best way I can do that is to convince somebody to click on a link that they shouldn't click on. And so the way that it would appear that these attacks worked is that these messages, rather than just coming from some stranger, you know, were coming from, or at least appeared to be coming from, a friend of one of these Google employees.
Interesting. And then did Google provide any rationale why they felt it was coming from China, A, and was it the implication that it might be sanctioned by the government, or did they actually say that as well?
Well, so Google said that they said that there were two tacks, if you will, to the attacks. And one was that they were trying to get Google's intellectual property. But they said around the same time there were also attacks on several Gmail accounts that belonged to human rights activists who are at cross purposes with the Chinese government. And so that was really the only evidence they provided that China was involved, was that at least some of the attacks on these Gmail accounts targeted Chinese rights advocates. But they've yet to really make any case how the attacks that targeted their intellectual property might in any way be tied to the Chinese government.
Interesting, because just as you said before, you know, you were quite right. If you're going to mug somebody, you want to catch them when they're off guard. And if you don't want to be caught yourself, you also – it would behoove you to throw out some red herrings out there. So it seems to me that, what a great way to, give everybody some misdirection. Maybe if they clearly – they sound like they were very patient, as you said. They're very smart and take their time. Maybe they're smart enough to figure if we go ahead and hack some certain types of sites, it'll get everybody looking the other way.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right, and I think that's a really legitimate question that we should be asking Google, and it's a question that Google is yet to really answer.
Because you know there is that backstory, right? That China is China, and Google is Google, and a lot of the large search engines and so forth that want to do business in China have to change their ways, right? I'm not sure how prevalent this is. Maybe if you know, you could tell us. I'm not trying to put you on the spot or anything, but is China in a category by itself where it makes demands on people like Google and says that we don't want you to have people able to access certain sites when they do their searches?
Well, I mean, Google several years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, received quite a bit of criticism, I think justifiably so, because they decided to start heavily censoring search results that are delivered within China. So if you go to google.cn, which is the official Google page for Chinese, you know, people living in the People's Republic of China, you're going to see majorly different search results for Tiananmen Square than you will if you go to google.com, for instance.
Unbelievable. I would expect so. Can you hold on for one more segment, Dan?
Certainly.
Great. Okay, friends, we're speaking with Dan Gooden, a technology writer, and you can hear just by what he's telling you why I wanted to have him come and talk with us. We'll be right back with him right after this.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
right, good friends, welcome back. This is Tom Kiley, INN War Report Radio, 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, right here on GCN, 4 until 5 p.m. Central Time, rounding out a week when we've had a very interesting week, and I hope you all have a great weekend, and we're going to continue on Monday. Ray Raphael will be joining us on Monday. He is a Revolutionary War historian, and because of all of the talk about the Tea Parties that have been going on around the country since the end of 2006. Most people don't realize that, but they really started back at about that time. I thought we should get a historian on here to set us straight about the actual Boston Tea Party, because the history is a little bit different than the way it's being presented in the modern day counterparts. And that's what's coming up on Monday. In the meanwhile, we're speaking with Dan Gooden today, continuing in our series on technology to help us put all this great technology that we have into a context that we need to be aware of. I think some of the things that we are not aware of. And Dan, before I continue, if any of our listeners want to be able to read more of what you write, where should they go?
Well, I write for theregister.co.uk. You can also get there by just pointing your browser at theregister.com. And I write, probably 2 to 3 stories a day, so it's not too hard to find my content once you get there.
I suppose they could also easily just search for Dan Gooden, G-O-O-D-I-N, and The Register.
That's another way to do it, yes.
That's what I use sometimes when I want to get to your stuff real quick. In any case, we were talking about China. I had a question for you, Dan. Maybe you can help us with this. It's pretty clear, China, it's hard to even define it anymore. You know, it seems to be communist in almost name only, maybe in the totalitarian aspect, in that there's no competitive party there or something like that. It's certainly sort of like capitalism gone wild. But for the government control portion of China, that we're still all quite familiar with that, and it was on everybody's mind when Google and the internet goes to China, how are they going to deal with it? So they have their restrictions that they put on a company like Google. Are there many other countries in the world, to your knowledge, that restrict the internet like that? I'm imagining maybe Saudi Arabia might have some restrictions or something.
Well, I think quite a few countries put restrictions on what their citizens can view, and they use firewalls and other types of things to prevent citizens from going to sites that the government has deemed subversive. For instance, I think there are probably dozens of countries that probably do that. What's unusual about China is that because they are so big and because the market opportunity is so large, that countries like Google and Cisco Systems and Yahoo, and you just go down the list, they're all falling all over themselves to do business there. And therefore, they're willing to kowtow to these restrictive dictatorial policies in a way that they're not willing to do with, say, a country like Iran. So what really sets China apart is the ability for them to basically get these companies to exercise policies that are extremely controversial. And Google is voluntarily censoring search results, so that if you go and you put in a search term like Tiananmen Square into google.cn, you will find absolutely no reference to the massacres that took place there.
You'll find all the flavors of ice cream you can buy there on a Saturday, probably, right?
Yeah, I mean, you'll find pictures of Tiananmen Square on a sunny day, and just a nice it shows it as a nice place, as a nice tourist destination, and that kind of thing. And you're not going to find Google, being willing to censor results, for other countries the way that they are for China.
Interesting. How would a country like Iran then deal with the lack of cooperation from Google? Do they just ban Google altogether, or do they have their own measures?
Generally speaking, yes. They get firewalls, and they get other things that prevent their citizens from going to Google.com. I mean, for instance, if you're in China, it's very difficult to go to Google.com because the Chinese government has made sure, has made it difficult for the average computer in China to be able to reach that particular domain name, and then they will allow their citizens to hit google.cn. So if Google won't actually create a website that is compliant with a particular government, then the government just bans Google altogether.
And I think we should also add the caveat that usually, historically, in these kinds of situations, it's we the people that can't find out anything that the government doesn't want us to. But I'm sure the elite in all of these places have their own private highway that goes right onto the information superhighway. They've probably got their own private secret on-ramps there, you know. Just my guess in any case. Then I guess the technology exists, of course, to do all of this stuff. Are you ever concerned about these kind – well, the slippery slope about censorship happening here? You know, this guy McConnell – I mean, Mitchell, I think his name is the I think I have it wrong now. The cyber czar that was under the Bush administration, he's recently been making discussions about how we have to change the internet and it has to be, traceable and so forth. Or any concern about that sort of thing happening here?
Well, I don't worry about censorship, outright happening here. A whole lot. I think the worry that some people have is that with things like warrantless wiretaps and that type of thing, how easy is it for your internet records, for instance, to be obtained by the government without them actually getting a proper search warrant? One of the big concerns that a lot of people have is whether your cell phone records can actually be obtained without a search warrant in cases where for instance, if you think about your cell phone, it's basically just a wireless device that communicates wirelessly with a base station somewhere in a close proximity. So those two things are kind of sending little beacons back and forth saying, hey, are you there? Yeah, I'm here. So if you think about it that way, that cell phone that's sitting in your pocket is really just a beaconing device. And right now, the government has been talking about, whether or not they should have to get a search warrant before finding out where your physical location was, at a given period of time, or where it may be in the future. And this is something right now that you're seeing a fair amount of disagreement between privacy advocates and law enforcement is whether your physical location as given up by your cell phone ought to be something that the government can get their hands on without a search warrant. So these are the types of things I think people need to actually think about and watch for in the coming years as these issues kind of work their way through the courts and the courts ultimately make a decision one way or the other.
And, of course, just like I believe the elites in China and Iran and places like that have their own access to all the information that everybody else doesn't, I also can't help but believe that there are secure cell phone devices. I'm sure there are agents of the government that use them all the time. Is there any, briefly, because the music's coming up, is there any hope of us being able to protect ourselves with encryption and so forth?
Well, absolutely. I mean, encryption exists today. You can get your hands on it. There's something called public key encryption that is incredibly powerful. And if the government has the ability to crack it, it certainly makes their life a lot harder.
Well, Dan, I think we're going to have to ask you to come back sometime to talk a little bit more about that because we're out of time for today. But I want to thank you for joining us. For the first time on INN, and I'll be in touch, and we'll have you back on to talk about some other things. I'll be also watching your articles.
Okay, well, my pleasure, Tom.
Thank you very much. We were talking with Dan Gooden. He writes for The Register. You can find him by searching for Dan Gooden, G-O-O-D-I-N, and The Register. Have a great weekend, friends. We'll be back on Monday.